All right, with that, thank you, Steve. We're going to pivot to the subject of the Chicago Fire of 1871. Our next speaker is Carl Smith, a professor of history and English at Northwestern University. He is the author of Chicago's Great Fire, The Destruction and Resurrection of an Iconic American City. And he will be discussing a case study of Chicago Fire of 1871. Go ahead, Carl.
Thanks for inviting me. The Chicago Fire began around 9 p.m. on the evening of Sunday, October 8, 1871, and ended about 30 hours later. It started about a mile and a half southwest of the center of the city. It turned out to be one of the biggest fires in urban fires in history. It was hot enough to bend iron, melt glass, turn stone structures to powder, but it consumed an area about 4 miles long and 3/4 of a mile wide. The losses included the entire commercial center of the city and a third of the city's evaluation. It did not, as you suggested earlier, Larry, burn the whole city down or most of it down, but it did burn down the crucial parts. 90,000 of 330,000 Chicagoans were instantly homeless, and many more didn't have any job all of a sudden. It burned so extensively for a combination of reasons, though Mrs. O'Leary and her cows were blameless. These included the weather. There was a very dry summer and fall, high October temperatures, strong winds from the southwest. There was a major fire just the evening before the Great Fire that damaged several pieces of firefighting equipment and incapacitated many firefighters and exhausted all of them. While the department was state of the art for the time, it was under-equipped and understaffed with fewer than 200 firefighters. On the fatal evening of October 8th, an inexplicable failure in the alarm system delayed the arrival of the already weakened and exhausted fire department, so that by the time it was on the scene, an otherwise commonplace small fire, thanks to high wind and flying embers, was unstoppable. Given where it began and the direction of the wind from the southwest, the downtown and the north side were doomed. The underlying reason the fire could do so much harm, however, was that Chicago, which had barely existed only 40 years earlier, had been built very hastily and sloppily, almost entirely out of wood. Even finer downtown buildings of brick and stone had much wood ornamentation, and there were wooden signs, sidewalks, and fences all over the place. What fire restrictions there were went unobserved and unenforced. Fire officials and leading newspapers had been warning of major trouble, but taxpayers and politicians resisted building restrictions and the cost of a bigger and better equipped department. It was as if Chicago were purposely constructed to burn down, and it did. But its recovery was as remarkable as its destruction. Within 2 years, a larger downtown had emerged, and by 1890, less than 20 years after the fire, the city's population had more than tripled to just over 1 million people, making it the second biggest city in the United States and growing fast continually, as it did up to 1950. The resolve and capability of Chicagoans shouldn't be underestimated in all this, but Chicago recovered for the same reason it rose so quickly in the first place. It had been the creation of the seismic 19th century forces of immigration and westward migration, industrialization and steam power, and the conquest of space and time by the telegraph and the railroad, which did not exist a few decades before the fire. Most important of all was its location at the southwestern tip of the Great Lakes, between the productive power and the consumer appetite of the eastern United States and all the resources of the farms, ranches, ranges, timberlands, coal fields, mines, and the continent's interior, the heartland, and beyond to the Rocky Mountains. Chicago was a natural major nexus in the emerging national and international economy, and so that made it an irresistible attraction for investment capital and people of entrepreneurial spirit. So it recovered because the keys of its vitalities were still there. In spite of all the destruction, much of the stores of commodities like lumber and grain were untouched. The Union stockyards were untouched. And more crucially, the railroad and telegraph network, except right in the center of the city, were just fine. The fire did nothing to alter the strategic location of the city. So investment capital and people continue to flow in faster than ever. So the question comes, what lessons does the fire offer for urban resilience? One is a matter of timing. If Chicago had to burn as it did, there could hardly have been a better moment than 1871. It was already solidly established, but also poised for future growth. Something similar was true for San Francisco in 1906 when it was hit by an earthquake, a major earthquake. But the situation was different, for example, in New Orleans in 2005 when Katrina struck. It was already in decline, and the blow was harder to absorb than Chicago's Great Fire. And also the quality of the disaster is very important. The Chernobyl disaster was virtually unrecoverable from, certainly in any kind of timely way, different from a fire or a flood, or even when they talk about a pandemic. Such disasters, including the current pandemic, put cities to a special test by their very nature, because they're places defined by scale and density. And the pandemic loves both scale, does density most of all. But the advantages and attractions of scale and density don't disappear. So if all other things being equal, cities can respond quite well after something like the current pandemic or even the fire. Resilience doesn't come easy, since all disasters, including the Great Chicago Fire, as much as Katrina, reveal and deepen existing social and economic divisions, and they can have a bitter aftermath as the fire did. But if cities can and do adapt to the larger rather than temporary exigencies of this or that isolated disaster, however large, they can retain their resilience. The tougher exigencies right now that threaten resilience centrally include things like climate change, and with it, a possibly ceaseless series of fires and floods that threaten rural and urban areas alike. So it's a tricky question, this matter of resilience. Thanks.
Thanks, Carl.